This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is off this week. I'm Bob Garfield. Two starkly different and highly interlocking news stories broke this week. The first was the president's proposed 2020 budget, which would cut more than $7 billion from the Department of Education.
Apparently in there, the notion that they'll do away with subsidizing student loans, loan forgiveness, that kind of thing.
The proposal would eliminate a program created by President George W. Bush that forgives federal student loans for certain borrowers who go on to work in public service or for a nonprofit after they have made payments for 10 years.
Overall, the proposal would reduce college loan subsidies by $207 billion over 10 years. The consequence? More obstacles for the non-rich to get a college education. And then, meanwhile,
the college admissions bribery scandal rocking the nation. Actress Felicity Huffman leaving court, one of the dozens of high-powered celebrities, executives, and coaches accused of forging documents and photos, cheating on SATs, and bribing school officials to get their children into elite universities.
Holy hell. Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, Bribe Your Kid into Georgetown Edition. Jaw-dropping allegations on the obscene abuse of privilege for the purpose of giving your teen underachievers a leg up. And of course, these accusations concern only the criminal expression of elite advantage. The scandal has also called attention to the completely legal multi-billion dollar industry of test prep and college consulting that confers major advantages to the wealthy. This is the New York Times' Jennifer Medina on Thursday's The Daily podcast.
If you believe that education, and that a college education specifically, is the great equalizer or can be the great equalizer of our country, what this shows you is that system is completely broken.
Well, gosh, that's not the story we get from our leaders. They have another achievement narrative altogether.
Generations of patriots fought to keep America a land of opportunity, where anyone of any race, any religion, from any background can make it if they try.
Presidents and social studies teachers have been telling us that our whole lives. But as Nathan Robinson wrote in The Guardian this week, quote, "This scandal only begins to reveal the lies that sustain the American idea of meritocracy." Now that's cold water in the face. Meritocracy, after all, is a word that suggests innate fairness and reward for accomplishment, the opposite of class privilege, and seemingly the perfect expression of the American ideal of endless possibility. But reality sometimes lies hidden below the surface until turbulence pushes it into view. It's what geologists call uplift. This hour, without any pre-planning and based entirely on recent news, turns out to be all about uplift, how our current political turbulence is rapidly pushing not just problems, but also long-buried potential solutions to the surface. Shortly, we will dig deeply into economic and social policy, but we'll begin with a meditation on this week's fresh outcropping, the myth of meritocracy. Come to discover, the word that so seems to distill our equal opportunity values was originally coined as satire. This from British sociologist Michael Young's 1958 The Rise of Meritocracy, a dystopian novel lampooning the British educational system.
What Young said was that what we have now is not an aristocracy of birth, but a meritocracy of talent.
John Patrick Leary is the author of Keywords, The New Language of Capitalism, one of which is meritocracy.
The satirical point there is that merit is determined not by an accident of one's birth, as in an aristocratic title, but instead merit is determined by one's access to an educational institution, which one is able to attend because of an accident of one's birth. And so meritocracy is a combination of merit and aristocracy. And the point that Young was trying to make originally was that the meritocracy was a new form of aristocracy that hid the old class privileges behind a veneer of educational equality.
So even though it sounds egalitarian, after all, what could be fairer than to proceed based on your own skills, talent, experience, and so on, it in fact just creates a gigantic Venn overlap with old-fashioned aristocracy, because it was the old-fashioned aristocrats who really had access to the education that could confer your merit.
Yeah, and when you think about what merit means and how we measure it and how we assess it, we think about what college did you go to? How do you present yourself? What kind of voice do you use in public settings? What do you look like? What gender are you? What race are you? There are all these kinds of measures of merit that have nothing to do with one's talents or with one's skills. And even one's talents and skills are themselves, of course, determined by your access to places that you learn talents and skills. And so there's no way of defining merit that doesn't involve some kind of social inequality. As you say, it suggests a kind of, to use another popular metaphor, for an equal playing field.
So that you, based on your own merit, your own God-given talent, that determines success.
Regardless of where you start out in life, if you work hard, if you do it for the right reasons, you can succeed in the United States of America.
Education in this country is an opportunity for all who show both the skill, the talent, the intellect, and the energy and the desire to be educated. It's a meritocracy.
In which we all have a kind of equal chance to rise based on our talents.
All right, but once again, the word sounds really good. And maybe it was inevitable that in time it would be uttered not in satire, but absolutely without irony. When did it start to turn that way?
Well, I think it started to become very popular again in the 90s. That's my sense, that meritocracy was a way of celebrating a kind of technocratic ideal of good governance and popular participation without class privileges or inherited titles and so forth. But in Tony Blair's Britain, meritocracy was a big watchword of his administration.
And the new establishment, it's not a meritocracy. It's a power elite of money shifters, middlemen, speculators, people whose self-interest will always come before the national or the public interest.
And Michael Young, who coined the term originally, you know, was on to this and had something to say about the expropriation of the term by Tony Blair and the like. He said, ability of a conventional kind, which used to be distributed between the classes more or less at random, has become much more highly concentrated by the engine of education, which seems to get us right to the nub of this week's dual outrages, the rigging of the game against people without means and for those with ridiculous amounts of money.
Mm-hmm. It's important when we think about meritocracy to remember that second half of the word, that it's an aristocracy based on a perceived demonstration of merit. It's not just a question of using the correct words or changing a vocabulary to describe the scandal, but the problem is even if you put aside all of the stuff that we've been talking about, meritocracy's original satirical meaning and how it's been forgotten and so on, what we are talking about when we talk about a meritocracy is a system of equal access that doesn't exist by any kind of reasonable measure, especially when we're talking about American higher education. So the college scandal that has erupted over the last week is a cheating scandal on one level. It's a scandal about parents and these kind of unsavory actors rigging in an illegal way the system of testing and so forth to get these privileged but apparently not very talented children into these elite schools. But it's better understood as a sort of flagrant example of the way that the college admission system works all the time rather than an example of the rules breaking down.
It seems to me that what you're describing is a word that is not only an illusion, but a kind of linguistic Potemkin village that obscures the ugly reality beneath it.
Yeah. You know, when we sort of assume that as a sort of bedrock principle, we tend not to interrogate whether it should be or whether it is, in fact, a lived reality for most people. you know, people often invoke the myth of meritocracy. That's a phrase you probably have heard a lot this week. There's actually sort of two myths. First, the myth that there is such a thing, and then the myth that the United States is committed to that imaginary thing in actual practice. And when we talk about a meritocracy, we're sort of assuming a national commitment to equality without really asking whether that commitment exists and without asking how we intend to preserve it. You know, after everybody's been indicted and after all of the prosecutions have gone forward, USC is still going to cost $70,000 a year or something. So the really big scandal here is not necessarily how college admissions work when people are cheating, but how it works when people aren't cheating.
John Patt, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
John Patrick Leary is a professor of English at Wayne State University and author of Keywords, The New Language of Capitalism. Coming up, a daring voyage to utopia. This is On the Media.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.